Our next case of this morning is number 05-2164, the United States against Cardona. Ms. Gambino.
Good morning, Judge Ripple, Judge Coffey, and Judge Sykes. Mr. Eddie Cardona is a young man in his 30s. However, with respect to his intellectual functioning, he is operating in the world as a fourth or fifth grade student would. The issue in this case is the judge, in considering the appropriate sentence, first of all, did not consider the 3553A factors as is required post-Booker. Instead, what the judge did was to treat the 3553 arguments of counsel as if they were departure arguments and applied the same limited language and reasoning to those arguments as would have been done pre-Booker under the departure rules. And finally, that the sentence imposed in this case on Eddie Cardona of 168 months, which was a guideline sentence at the low end, was unreasonable in light of two major 3553A factors. The first of those is Mr. Cardona's, what the judge characterized as a diminished capacity. Instead of looking at this from the point of view of 3553A1 and looking at the personal history and characteristics of Mr. Cardona, beginning with his early education, Mr. Cardona was in early special education courses very early on. There were two competency hearings involved in this case, which the court did not take into account at the time of sentencing. Mr. Cardona originally was found incompetent based on the testimony of a psychologist who said that both Mr. Cardona had serious problems with processing information and memory, and he was at a low intellectual functioning range. In fact, he's in the borderline mentally retarded range of functioning. Mr. Cardona was eventually found competent, but there was also testimony by a government psychiatrist who agreed with the findings of the defense psychiatrist that Mr. Cardona was functioning at this very low range, that he had problems with memory deficit, and that he had problems with processing information, but said that he could be competent if people were patient enough to explain information to him during the course of the trial. And based on that testimony, he was found competent. But in the sentencing context, the question is, how much is reasonable? In fact, the statute directs the court to consider a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary to serve the purposes of sentencing. And rather than doing that, the court looked at diminished capacity as it would have looked at diminished capacity pre-Booker, and said there simply wasn't a connection between his diminished capacity and the offenses that he committed.
Why was that improper? And our cases have said that departure analysis is not required, but it's not improper as a matter of law either. The prior departure analysis under pre-Booker guidelines case law is appropriate for guidance purposes.
It's appropriate for guidance purposes, but not for relying on it in its entirety. In fact, your cases in Arnault and Johnson have said that departure analysis as such is obsolete, and that, in fact, you need to consider the issue more broadly. And with respect to the diminished capacity, not only did he use this analysis, which cabined, or from his point of view, cabined his discretion, because he made statements during the course of the sentencing that this was a severe sentence, but he felt that it was required by law, in addition to tracking the departure language with respect to diminished capacity. But he did not pay attention to the actual record in the case, and he erred in saying that there had been no psychological testimony with respect to the level of his diminished capacity, or the fact, for instance, that the psychologists both pointed out that his functioning range did leave him susceptible to the will and manipulation of other people, which is precisely what happened in this case.
Well, if I could try to focus your argument a little bit, are you arguing that it's improper as a matter of law for a judge to essentially track prior departure law or departure analysis in applying the advisory guidelines and arriving at either a guidelines or a non-guideline sentence, or are you arguing that the judge made some sort of a factual mistake that's subject to the clearly erroneous standard of review, or are you arguing both?
Well, I'm actually arguing both. Okay. In response to the first, it's not an error to look at that analysis, but it is an error if as the judge clearly did in this case, feels himself cabined by the same restrictions that departure analysis imposed prior to Booker.
And what evidence in the record is there that Judge Kaur felt himself so cabined in this case?
Well, first of all, he did not address the 3553 factors as such at all. He did the guideline calculation. He said in response to a request that he address these factors, you know, yes, I know the guidelines are advisory, but then went into this departure type analysis in which he characterized diminished capacity as limited in the way that it was pre-Booker, and the same thing with the family issues, which are also part of his personal history and characteristics. He basically said the family characteristics or the family circumstances here are not extraordinary, which is the guideline heartland analysis and does not have to do with what the statute requires, which is to look at a sentence not only in terms of the guidelines but in terms of these other factors, so that the discretion a judge has is broader and not narrower, or not as narrow as it once was.
Was there any link shown at the time of sentencing between the crimes committed and his diminished mental capacity?
Your Honor, at the time of sentencing, what happened is that Mr. Cardona himself did respond to questions by the judge, and there had been presentation by the psychiatrist and reports.
No, but you haven't answered what I asked you, though. Was there any link shown between the type of crime committed and his diminished mental capacity? It's a yes or no.
Well, I mean, it's a yes or no question. Certainly a person.
Yes, that's the answer. I'd like to, if you can give it.
It's not possible to say yes or no. When a person is functioning at a particular level, that informs everything they do. And in this case, as was presented at the sentencing hearing.
Did the psychologist or psychiatrist in any way find it? That there was any relationship?
He had testified. He didn't testify at the sentencing hearing. He had testified at the competency hearings.
That could be used at that time.
Right.
Did he find any relationship?
He said that he was susceptible to...
No, any relationship between the type of crime and his diminished capacity.
In the sense that, yes, he was susceptible to the manipulation of others, which is what happened here with the informant setting him up.
No, the type of crime.
Well, in those specific words, Your Honor, no.
Well, thank you.
Now, also, with respect to the issue of mental capacity, we've seen the Supreme Court provide some direction with respect to both juveniles and mentally retarded individuals. And even though Mr. Cardona was not diagnosed as mentally retarded, he was on the borderline range, which means he was just above where that would be. And the Supreme Court has suggested that people who are not functioning as an adult of average intelligence in the world do not have the same kind of moral or other kinds of responsibilities and should not be treated the same as ordinary individuals. In this case...
For purposes of the death penalty.
For purposes of the death penalty, yes. But in the criminal context, I think we can take some instruction from that. If a person is not functioning with the same kind of moral responsibility due to their intellectual functioning, then in a criminal context also, where we deal with moral and actual responsibility, they should not be treated as harshly because deterrence and incapacitation don't mean the same thing with respect to those individuals as with respect to an average adult. And I see my time is running. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder.
Thank you, Ms. Gambino. We'll hear now from Mr. Fullerton.
May it please the court, both factors or both sentencing issues that Mr. Cardona urges here were urged on the district court at the time of sentencing, that is his diminished mental capacity and his family circumstances. The district court considered those factors and the evidence in the record supporting Mr. Cardona's request for a reduced sentence at length. And the record demonstrates that. We cited that in our brief. The district court's sentence was the product of an accurate calculation of the guidelines and a thorough consideration of the history and characteristics of Mr. Cardona, his criminal history, his family circumstances, his diminished mental capacity, the nature of the offense, and the need for a deterrent effect on Mr. Cardona as well as others in this society. The district court thus, you know, considered the 3553A factors. It considered the guidelines to be advisory, was well aware of its ability and the legality of going below the guideline range, but chose not to. It was unpersuaded by the factors that the sentencing factors and considerations that Mr. Cardona urged upon it at the time of sentencing. That is not unreasonable. It was not unreasonable for the district court to remain within the guideline range, at the low end, in fact, considering that there was no link established between Mr. Cardona's diminished capacity and the commission of these offenses for which he was sentenced. Offenses which, as the record shows, were repeated in character over a lengthy period of time, involving, I think, some 13 separate narcotics offenses and 3 separate firearms offenses. That was.
Do you recall offhand what the nature of those firearms offenses?
There were 3 possession of firearms by a felon offenses, 3 922G offenses. Now, those offenses were considered as relevant conduct in the plea agreement. In other words, Mr. Cardona did not plead to those offenses, but he stipulated to that conduct as in the plea agreement as relevant conduct for purposes of sentencing.
And the nature of the other offenses were? They were all
distribution of cocaine.
Distribution.
Both powder cocaine and crack cocaine. Again, Mr. Cardona had pleaded guilty to, I believe it was count 7 of the indictment, which comprehended a distribution of some 52 grams of crack cocaine, but there were other 12 other powder and crack cocaine distributions.
Do you remember offhand the length of time involved in those priors, how long a period of time was encompassed?
Both the stipulated conduct and the offense, the count 7 conduct, began in July of 2000 and continued to April of 2001, and that's in the plea agreement.
District court did allude to the recidivist nature of the defendants.
It did. The district court did allude to the fact that Mr. Cardona's history was not good, that the nature of this offense had gone on and on, as it said, and that Mr. Cardona had, in fact, he characterized this offense as an ugly offense. So what I'm saying is that the district court's sentence was reasonable. Now, it's true, as Ms. Gambino says, that Judge Kaur did not cite 3553A factors and tick them off one by one on the record and explicitly. But he was not required to do so. He was required to consider the guidelines, consider them to be advisory, and consider factors that would either take the sentence above or below the guideline range. And he did. He did all of that. And as I said, the sentence, given the evidence in the record, cannot be said to have been unreasonable. District court considered the very things that Ms. Gambino was urging on this court. Unless there are other questions, the government would ask that the court here affirm the sentence of the district court.
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Fullerton.
Thank you.
How much time does Ms. Gambino have? You have a minute left.
Thank you. I'd like to clarify with respect to the nature of this offense, Your Honor, because what happened here was there was a cooperating informant whom Mr. Cardona believed to be his friend, who began by buying small quantities of powder cocaine from him. And then it was at his request that he sort of got his confidence, got him to provide this cocaine for him. And then it was at the informant's request that he wanted, on two occasions, crack cocaine, and on these other occasions, firearms. And so this was not the sort of situation in which Mr. Cardona is out soliciting, but in which there was a cooperating informant who all along used this time period to get credit towards his own sentence and to take advantage of a person who was not functioning as an average adult would in the world. And with respect to the family circumstances, the judge also ignored the social development study that was provided to the judge with respect to Mr. Cardona's daughter, who has the same disability that he does and who, according to the report, was very much affected by this, and there was a link established to his presence in her life.
I think we recall that from the briefs. Thank you, Ms. Gambino. And Ms. Gambino, you did serve by appointment of the court in this case. And please accept the thanks of the court for the very significant efforts you've made here today on behalf of your client. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Indeed, our thanks to both counsel in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.